Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, this idea, isn't there, that travelling when you're young is an Australian rite of passage. You know, you have the gap year, you set off with a heavy pack to parts unknown. Seems so rooted in Australian culture. Now, you might think that humping a 15-kilo pack is not very desirable for those in the 65-plus age group. Perhaps you think they'd prefer a wheelie suitcase. And actually, don't get me started on wheelie suitcases. What about taking business on a long haul or staying in five-star hotels or taking luxury cruises? While I'm sure this appeals to many people, older travellers are increasingly challenging some of the stereotypes that have existed about them for some time. I remember, you know, I went to Ethiopia 2017 and I was really surprised. I was in a small group tour to find there were these four or five Australian women in their 60s and 70s, all, you know, on this tour as well. And I found myself thinking, that's what I want to be doing when I'm in my 60s and 70s too. The over 65s market is growing, and so are the ways that older people are travelling. So I've got three older travellers tonight I want you to meet. And if this is you, someone who's been going out and having some serious adventures in your later years, please join in. 1300 800 222. Now, Catherine Tavry is an author and speaker in her 60s. She recently trekked to Everest Base Camp. She swum from Asia to Europe. She travels as much as she can. And in fact, Catherine was just telling me off air, she used to appear as a regular on Tony Delroy's show years ago. Hi, Catherine.
G'day. Many, many years ago on customer service, totally different topic.
There we go. I'd also like to introduce you to Victoria Rose in her 70s. Victoria's had a career in the military and leadership training. She has recently travelled around the world solo with a backpack on the aged pension. Pretty impressive. Hi, Victoria.
Hello. Thank you for the invite.
You're very welcome. And I've also got with me Tony Wheeler, one of the co-founders of Lonely Planet, also in his 70s, a veteran traveller from way back who continues to travel the world in all sorts of ways. Hi, Tony. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm certainly not going to stop.
Excellent to hear. Now, I wonder, at your ages, do you actually feel, Catherine, like you're an older traveller? Does something feel different to the way it did when you were younger or not?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. I've never been this old before, so I'm not quite sure how I'm supposed to act. I often meet younger people and, you know, hang out with them. I met a young Pakistani flight attendant recently, was 35, and we hung out together in a place. And I think it's a matter of what you feel in your mind. I'm conscious as I'm older, I'm maybe not as physically able as I was when I was younger, but I don't feel a difference. There's still that curiosity that I've got in terms of exploring new lands and meeting new people.
Yeah. What about you, Victoria?
The interesting thing about traveling is that age disappears somehow. What people see is that you are an adventurous spirit. You're actually doing something that they see as quite interesting. I mean, are you mad? Are you really doing this at your age, traveling around and going with the flow? Nothing's booked, just seeing how it all unfolds. So age, not a problem.
Yeah. But Victoria, do you get that a bit? People saying, are you crazy traveling the world at your age?
I did get that a little bit, and mainly from expats. So I went to places where, like in Turkey and in Albania and in Croatia, they were like thinking, oh my gosh, I couldn't do what you've done. How could you do that? Because to them, it just seemed too hard. And why would you do that when you can just go on a fabulous cruise, or you can just go on a tour coach and be shown the sights? And I'm thinking, no. I first started traveling when I was 18 years old, and I always wanted to see the culture of the place that I went to. So that hasn't changed.
Yeah. And Tony, does it feel different these days for you in some ways? Do you feel like you're a quote unquote older traveler?
Well, yes and no. I mean, personally, I'm in complete denial. I'll try and do anything now that I would have done 50 years ago or even longer. But on the other hand, there are other people who think you shouldn't be. And one example of this, of course, is travel insurance. once you get to a certain age, it is more difficult to get travel insurance. And you have to just put up with the fact that other people are seeing you in a way that you don't see yourself.
Actually, this is one of the first SMSs I had in. Kate says you can't get travel insurance when you turn 70, and that's limiting. But Tony, you found ways around that, haven't you? You can shop around and get it.
Yeah, you certainly can shop around. And, you know, 70 seems to be the sort of barrier line when they treat you with more concern. But it isn't just age, it's also destinations. I mean, I went to Africa twice last year, and, you know, and even Africa, there are safer, as far as travel insurance companies are concerned, there are safer places and less safe places. So it's a battle to cover some of these things.
Yeah. So, Catherine, what's your understanding of how old you can be before you really can't go anywhere and you know, not get insurance?
Well, you mentioned the number 70. I actually think it might be a little bit older depending on your credit card holder,
right,
or also depending on the insurer, and again, depending on destination. I just came back from Saudi Arabia 3 weeks ago, and I found it really easy to get insurance that I needed just with my actual credit card. But it is. There's certainly a bit of ageism creeps in there, but they're obviously looking at their numbers. In terms of, obviously, more things do go wrong as you get older, but you probably do less stupid things as well. So,
well, that's part of that as well. Catherine, if there came a point when you couldn't get travel insurance because of your age, would you give up traveling, or would you just say, oh, stuff it, I'll take the risk?
Too early to say, I think, but it would depend on what I was doing. I just came last year. I went kayaking in Greenland, and I needed to get some sort of medevac if something happened. The company I went with, a very small group called Aurora, who was actually founded by Greg Mortimer, who is the first Australian to climb Everest, just a very, very small group, they insisted that you have it. And so, you know, there's certain things that you can't do without it. And they're protecting themselves, of course, as well. But it was absolutely fabulous. But, you know, I guess you assess every risk. Like I found risky coming into the ABC studios tonight. It was raining. It was dark. I couldn't see the street signs. Life is a risk.
Well, I'm glad you took that risk and got here, Catherine. Gosh, everything you're saying there, I'm just so, what, you have to. I have to find out more about this. These adventures, and we've barely got into them already, sound amazing. I guess you've all been travellers to some degree over your lives. Victoria, take us back to your first travel experience.
My first travel experience, well, I could have a bit of fun here, if I may. My mother was one of those unwed mothers, so that's way back in 1949, and so she was banished down to Albany, and which is what happened in those days, and she got a job. She was so young, she couldn't have been a barmaid. She must have been cleaning rooms in a hotel, and one day she'd fallen, and she was getting this pain in her back, and she thought that was because of the fall. So she went to her room, and lo and behold, it was because I was about to burst onto the world scene. So that was my first solo, sort of a bit of a joke, but there was just mum and me in the room. So that was my first effort at solo travel.
Oh, well, okay. And so what about a bit later on when you travelled by more traditional methods?
18 years old, I did, as you've already mentioned, what a lot of young Australians did in those days. I'm not so sure it's done so much now, but in those days it was like a rite of passage to do that, to go over to the UK and just spend time there. And that's exactly what I did on my own, because no one else wanted to do it and no one had the money to do it. But I worked three jobs to gain the funds to do that.
Yeah. Catherine, tell us about your first travel experience.
Well, my very first travel experience was on the Canadian Pacific Railways as a child from Calgary to Vancouver.
Wow.
Because my dad worked for the railways. But my first overseas trip was to Australia. My parents died when I was 21 quite suddenly, and my best friend and her husband were teaching in Melbourne, and I was an only child. I thought, I need a best friend. So I came with a backpack, $200, and a one-way ticket, which was all I could afford, to Australia for a three-month working holiday. And through incredibly bad time management, I've stayed well over 40 years.
I think it's the same story that normally happens. You meet a bloke and you end up staying.
No, I did not meet a bloke. I imported a bloke from Canada, and then I exported him a few years later.
Do you think Canadians are as travel hungry as Australians?
Quite probably, but maybe not much as much so, because we've got the United States. States, I should say, we had it at our doorstep there, and probably Europe was a lot closer too. But I never went to Europe like most of my friends did after university, because I had a student loan and that I had to repay. And so I really hadn't thought that much about overseas travel. And then it just, once it got in my blood, it's kind of fatal. Mm. I think Mark Twain once said, travel is fatal to prejudice. And I love it.
Mm. Well, look, we are talking about, and I mean, we're hearing about some of their younger adventures, but Catherine Devery, Victoria Rose and Tony Wheeler are all in their 60s and 70s. They're all still traveling adventure travel. I want to talk to you if you're somebody who's in an older age group who's also out and about traveling the world as adventurously as you possibly can, because, you know, travel's really changing. This over 65 age group is perhaps the biggest growing travel market. And I think the baby boomers are doing it a lot differently to the ways that generations before them have done. Tony, I know your story's been told many times, but just take us back to that period in your life when you decided that you'd, you were travelling around England and Europe first, weren't you, before you decided to drive all the way from London to Australia?
Yeah, well, I was in a situation of travelling with my parents, because my father was with an airline and involved with travel. But I don't think travel ever really counts until you do it yourself. You know, going out somewhere where it's your parents who sort things out and book the hotel and everything else, and then when you finally have to go out and find a place to stay yourself and get on the bus yourself or book the airline ticket or whatever, it's a whole different story. And the big trip that, you know, made my career ever since was doing the Asia Overland trip, the hippie trail, as it was called, 1972, so 51 years ago now. And my Maureen, we just got recently married, and we set out from London in an old car, and we drove it to Afghanistan and sold it there, and we carried on, and eventually we ended up in Sydney with 27 cents between us. It was the start of Lonely Planet.
Oh, wow. Amazing story. Now, I know, Tony, someone emailed you recently and said that they felt like they were now Hilton hippies. What's a Hilton hippie?
That was somebody saying, you know, that they still like to travel the way they always did when they were teenagers or in their 20s or whatever, hippie-like. But they wanted a little comfort as well. They didn't want to be in the youth hostel anymore and queuing up for a cold shower. They wanted some comfort. Hilton or some other comfortable hotel. So they said that they were Hilton hippies. They'd travel the same way, but at the end of the day, they wanted a bit of comfort.
Hear, hear.
Victoria, are you also like that? Are you sort of, you know, looking for a few more creature comforts these days?
Probably on my next trip, I might, but it is a whole different scene when you are in a chosen country and you're actually with the people that live there. You see a part that you will never see from the Hilton, and you'll never see as you're gazing out from the coach window. Now, that could be a good thing, because I did end up in some icky spots, but basically no Hilton for me. And I'll just also give you one example. I did end up, when I went to Bali, I stayed in a magnificent, most expensive hotel. I had that many frequent flyer points, the good old bad old days, but it was gorgeous, but no one speaks to you. It's not the same. I like the relationship, the communicating, and getting to know people, community.
Now, Victoria, your story is that you've actually been able to travel the world on a pension, because I'm sure there are some people who go, oh, you know, I'm on the pension, won't be able to do it. How on earth did you make that happen?
So just to back up a little bit, in 2014, I wrote a book called How to Make the Rest of Your Life the Best of Your Life, Tough Love for Smart Single Women Over 60. And that became an Amazon bestseller for about 3 microseconds. because that's only how long it lasts. But then one day I went, oh my, I was ashamed because I realized I was not living my own book. So then I had a look around and I thought, what is it that I can do? And what I noticed was a lot of my female friends and clients and people that I knew that lived in the neighborhood were not living life well either, because they felt that here we are on a pension, we can't step out, we can't do things. So their vision was getting narrower and narrower. And I thought, right, that's it. I am going to do this. And I just somehow, synchronicity, serendipity, who knows what caused it, but things just came together. And I did it for 16 months. Took meticulous notes of every single cent that I spent, and I absolutely lived on an Australian age pension as long as I didn't pay for accommodation. I house sat and I volunteered. That's how I did it.
Wow. And so how long did you say you kept doing, you were able to do that on the pension?
I did it for 16 months.
Now, did that coincide with then COVID hitting at the end?
I got back, talk about timing. I arrived back in Australia mid-December 2019.
Okay. And so what have you been able to do since, Victoria?
So life changed for me, as it has for so many people, because I was locked into a state, then I was locked out of Victoria and locked in here, and I was house sitting, and then they were locked into, oh my gosh. So I ended up house sitting in Port Macquarie for 7 months. So somehow it's all worked out. I'm booked up with house sitting until October this year, and not spending a cent on rent or utilities, anything like that.
Nice work if you can get it, Victoria. Sounds like you're really doing it well. Now, I want to bring Liz into the conversation. He's giving us a call from the Central Coast. Hi, Liz.
Hello. How are you going?
Going very well. You want to tell us about some adventures you've been having. I think you must have been in your late 70s.
Yes, I was 78. This is 4 years ago. I went on a freighter come luxury liner called the Aran Nui, and I went to Tahiti. And it was very exciting because we watched the Tahitians, who were most of the staff on board, unloading and loading all different types of freight to many, many of the different islands. And the people were always excited to see the vessel arrive and had huge barbecues with everybody, a big party. Then we would get off from the inflatables and go to the island and visit all the different crafts. Every island had a different type of craft, from tattooing on one island, making things out of palm leaves at another, carving the spear of the swordfish, you know. I don't know what you call that part.
And Elise, I think you went swimming with stingrays.
I went swimming with reef sharks and stingrays, and it was a bit scary to begin with, but then it was just so wonderful and I was not going to miss out.
Why, were people looking at you going, oh, is this one going on to do the stingrays? I mean, was there a question about whether you would miss out?
Well, the only thing, no. I did everything except climb a huge mountain to a great big old tree which had the heads of past generations, because they were apparently, what do you call it, cannibals, because I thought I'd fall. I wasn't very steady on my feet, but I'm wonderful in the water. And that reminds me, in a couple of weeks' time, I'm not quite 82, but I will be very shortly. I'm going to Avoca Beach, and the Surf Lifesavers is taking me out in their rubber ducky, because as I explained to them, I came from Amsterdam in 1947 and lived at Bronte Beach, and I have never been saved by Lifesavers. And I said, I would love to go in a rubber ducky, please. And they said, yes, we'll take you.
Oh, I thought you for a moment you were going to sort of pretend, get thrown out then, Liz, and get rescued by a hunky Lifesaver.
No, just have a ride. and it's not that exciting, but it was fun. I played table tennis with 20-year-olds. When I saw them playing, I thought, oh, I can do as well as that. So when they'd all been playing for quite some hours, I asked the elder, their two youngest ones, could I have a game? I think I'm about equal to your standard. And they sort of looked at me sideways and thought, what, this old blah, 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 starting with F and ending with T?
No.
And I had a game and I won. And I had another few games and then I sat down exhausted. And the next day I watched shipboard golf, I suppose you'd call it, and a couple of people came over and said, can we play table tennis with you? So by the time I came home, my poor hips, I was
angry. Oh, wow. Yeah, wow. Liz, sounds like everyone, your adventurous spirit was very contagious there, Liz. Look, fair play to you. And thanks to Lynette on the text who says, at 67, I backpacked for 12 months around Eastern Europe and the Middle East, staying in youth hostels and cheap rooms, meeting interesting travellers. We swapped highlights. We used local trains and buses and mingled with the locals. So I want to ask you all this because I stayed in a lot of youth hostels when I was younger and I kind of always felt awkward when there was that older person in the room. And so now that I'm an older person, I don't really want to share a room, but I also don't want to be the older person that the young people look at and go, who's that older person in the room? Would you still stay in youth hostels? Tony, I might throw that one to you first.
Yeah, but you know, I always say, you know, you can have all the money in the world. There are places you'll go to, and the most you can spend for the accommodation that night is $5, because that's the most expensive place in town. And every year I look back on the year and I think, yeah, well, what was the most expensive? Oh, my God, did I spend that amount of money? And then what was the cheapest? Oh, wow, that's kind of nice to think I can still do that sort of thing.
So you're saying youth hostels, yes or no, Tony?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If that's the only choice, I'll definitely take it.
You're happy staying in the room with the potentially five or six younger people?
I'm not sure if they'll want me in the room.
Oh, this is my point.
Oh, my God, do you snore?
Exactly.
Catherine, youth hostels, yes or no?
Absolutely not. I did the Camino last year, and there was no way I was staying in a hostel with, you know, 40 other people snoring and farting all night long. I was happy to do the walk, whatever it took, but I really like, I guess I'm in a very fortunate position of what I would call probably hybrid travel because I traveled a lot with work with IBM and now as a professional speaker, I speak all over the world. So the client pays business class usually for me to get there. And I often then swap the high heels for the hiking boots and might stay in a, you know, might even leave my bags and everything in a 5-star hotel and go off with a back, you know, for 3 or 4 days and go off with a backpack elsewhere. But no, I don't share rooms with anyone anymore. And even George Clooney, I think it would be touch and go.
Victoria, youth hostels?
Absolutely. Unless you're in Siena, of course. And that was when I had just turned 50. I gave myself a 7-week backpacking across Italy and the Greek islands. And I went to Siena. And if you were over a certain age, and I think it was 50, it might have been 40, but whatever it was, they said to me I could only stay for one night because I was too old.
Really?
It's the absolute truth. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what the age limit was after which, you know, like how old did you have to be before you could only stay one night?
Well, I shouldn't have even stayed the one night, but I was aghast and I said, look, it's dark, it's late, I'm scared. You've got to really do that, you know. And she said, one night. And it was either 45 or it couldn't have been 50 because I had just turned 50. So perhaps it was 50. Yeah, you were too old. The hostel was for younger ones. But I have a story that's even worse than that, possibly. So I stayed at a youth hostel in a backpackers in Albania and I walked in the room. There were three other young men in the room. And I went, oops. Anyway, I stayed. I was only there for two nights, and it was fine. They were so respectful. So you do what you have to do to get where you need to go.
Absolutely. I'm glad you're all right there, Victoria.
Nightlife with Suzanne Hill
on ABC Radio.
Yeah, we're talking about travelling when you're older. My guests are Catherine DeVry, a Sydney-based author and motivational speaker, Victoria Rose, who's travelled the world on solo on a pension, and Tony Wheeler, who is the co-creator of the Lonely Planet travel books. And I have to thank you, Tony, because you've saved my bacon, your books, more than a couple of times out there on the road. Tony, do you think there are actually any advantages of travelling when you're older? I mean, we know that the insurance is harder to get. Maybe the body can't go as far as it wants to. Do you find that anything is better?
Well, you've certainly got the experience. You know, that's always a good thing. And, you know, when you're sitting around the campfire or whatever, you may well have more stories to recount than travellers who haven't been around for so long. Look, I find it just as good as I did when I was younger. And, you know, you do, I'm not going to push aside getting a little bit of respect for the places you've been. But on the other hand, you know, you don't go anywhere, I feel, that you don't meet somebody who's been further than you have. You know, and you think, well, I'm pretty clever getting here, but then somebody else turns up and their trip just blows yours out of the water. So you shouldn't be too confident about age and experience.
Tony, I think, though, you have come across a few places where you've been able to get a senior's discount, haven't you?
Yeah, well, last year I was doing a little road trip in the States with a British journalist friend, and we picked up a car in Milwaukee. And what state is Milwaukee in? It's in Wisconsin, isn't it? And we drove up north. We ended up as far north as Winnipeg, and then went back down to Fargo in North Dakota. But there was one stage crossing Wisconsin. We were thinking, well, where are we going to stay tonight? And we actually had the new Lonely Planet USA guide and looked up where we were. And it said that this particular town, Eau Claire in Wisconsin, had a hotel, the Oxbow, which had a hipster vibe. So I pulled out my phone and looked up the Oxbow Hotel. And not only did they have a hipster vibe, but they offered senior citizen discounts. This is a combination you find so rarely. You know, the hipster vibe plus senior citizen discounts. Well, we grabbed two rooms immediately. When we got there, at the check-in desk, they had a little library of old vinyl LPs, and every room had a little record player, and you could take three records back to your room and play them.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's as hipster as you can get, isn't it?
I know. Did you talk to any of the other hipsters who were staying there?
Oh, they thought it was a great place. The town itself was great. And, you know, we got recommendations of which bar to hit that night and where to go and eat.
Now, it's funny, I've got a couple of SMSs here. One's from Ropey and Badgerbub, who says, I was a life member of the YHA, oh, and I must be HI, Hostelling International. He said it was revoked when I turned 50, gutting. Whereas Jenny said, Suzanne, I'm 78. I joined the YHA in 1980. I've done four world trips in youth hostels. I've just come back from 3 weeks in New Zealand and Tahiti in youth hostels, including 12-bed mixed dorms. Hat goes off to you, Jenny. I don't think I could do that anymore. But Jenny says $30 a night, so it saves your pension. Absolutely. But look, I mean, that's an interesting one. I mean, Victoria, you touched on this as well when you got put in the room with the three young men. And I certainly know when I was younger, you know, sometimes you would turn up to, it happened a couple of times, I turned up to a hostel and I got put in a room on my own. And then the manager came around and knocked on the door, the male manager, late at night to see if I happened to need anything. And I think we can all tell what he was after. But, I mean, I wonder, Victoria, do you think, because a lot of places you travel, you do get sexually harassed as a woman. Has some of that died off as you have gotten older?
Yes, absolutely. And that's good. But you get a different feeling from people. I find more that the women are more open to smiling at you and supporting you. A lot of it, though, has got to do with how you feel about yourself and the attitude you have around being in someone else's country. It has to be respectful. And I, you asked Tony about being an older traveller and what is it? What is the experience like? I feel that you enjoy the moment more. You're not rushing to get here and rushing to get there. You're where you are and you're looking around and enjoying the beauty of where you are in that moment.
Mm. Catherine, have you found that when you were younger you sort of would get sexually harassed in various places and that perhaps that's changed as you've gotten older?
Yes, it has. And but even when I was younger, I would always have my imaginary husband. So I would move a ring to my wedding ring finger and I would, you know, have an imaginary husband back at the hotel. But you know what? Even in Sydney, when I'm taking a taxi late at night, I have an imaginary husband at home. But having just come back from Saudi Arabia, as I mentioned, you know, my friends were joking. They said, don't you know how dangerous it is for a woman? You'll probably end up the third or fourth wife or something. And I never had any bad experiences whatsoever. Even though, you know, polygamy is practiced, I felt totally safe. And I think, again, it's the sort of places and positions you would put yourself mm-hmm. in as an older woman versus a younger woman. I would never be I'm not out late at night at bars or discos or placing myself in a potentially more vulnerable situation.
Yeah. My notes say that actually you did have a taxi driver hit on you who was a bit sleazy, though.
Oh, in Sydney.
Oh, in Sydney, right.
The most dangerous I felt in Saudi Arabia was when the taxi Ubers are very common there. And I like Uber because, again, it's more tracked for a safety point of view. And the most dangerous I ever felt in a taxi there was when the guy was driving down a freeway with one hand at 100 kilometers an hour. And with his other hand, he's trying to get on Spotify the Australian national anthem to make me feel more welcome. So I'm driving down this freeway. He's only got one hand on the wheel with the Australian national anthem playing. And that's the most dangerous I felt the whole time.
A couple of nice texts. Oh, Greg says, I backpacked around Europe in the early 90s in a wheelchair solo. Yeah. Props to you, Greg. A lot of the Italian hostels, Greg says, you had to be out by 9 in the morning and in by 8:30. And if you didn't abide by those directions, you were in a lot of trouble. Now, I'm afraid this text message has got cut off, but a wonderful segment. I'm a fit but nervous 64-year-old who recently lost my soulmate and travelling companion. And that's where the text gets cut off. But I would imagine that you're wondering whether you've got whether you're ready to get out there again. Do you ever find it hard travelling solo, Catherine?
No, I don't. There's time, and I usually do travel solo because, as I mentioned, I'm often in a country to speak at a conference for work, and it's often last minute, and you don't have the opportunity for friends that can come with you. But I would say to that person that's texted in, why don't you just, if you're just putting your foot in the water, why not join something like a small group tour like you did in Ethiopia, Suzanne? It just gives you a bit more confidence. And once you get going, your confidence will build. So I encourage you to do it. And the fact that you're single and maybe you've just lost your partner, don't let that put you off, because it'll put you in a different place, in a different mindset to help you look at everything in your life differently.
Now, I want to talk about cruises because they seem to also to be a bit of a rite of passage of getting older. Tony Wheeler, where do you stand on cruises?
I'm not enthusiastic about, the big giant cruise ships that they leave destination A and, you know, a few days later they're back at destination A and all you've really seen is the cruise ship and going by a few places. But we had a call in a few minutes ago about going on the Aranui, the passenger and cargo ship around French Polynesia, which I did just before Christmas. And just like that person calling in, I thought it was fabulous. I thought it was just a great trip. You know, you weren't just on a cruise ship. You were there delivering the cargo at each island. It was a terrific experience. So, and there are some places in the world, you know, if you want to go to Antarctica, unless you've got your own boat to take down there, you're going to have to go on a ship. Try and find the smallest one available, but that's the option.
Victoria, where do you stand on cruises?
Even if you paid me, probably not.
Why not?
How long have you got?
Just give us a couple of dot points.
Well, for a start, when I started my travelling as an 18-year-old, it was on the P&O Orcades, and I get horribly motion sick really badly. But that was a voyage. It was going from A all the way around the world to B. I have never been on board a ship since. The thought of being locked into that space, I don't care how big the ship is, and I can't escape. I actually am, believe it or not, inclined to be an introvert, except when it's better to be an extrovert or as people think you are. I need to be free.
Yeah.
I need to be spontaneous and decide, will I stay here another night or will I move on?
Yeah. Catherine?
I probably have a different view to Victoria. Likewise, I used to get a little bit seasick, and certainly going to the Antarctic across the Drake Passage, which is often known as the Drake Shakes, I thought of throwing myself off the back of the ship. I thought it would be less horrendous than the green that I was feeling in my gills when even the doctor was seasick. But I actually like cruises, which actually surprises my friends. But again, not on the big ships, and cruises with a purpose to sometimes get to destinations that you otherwise couldn't get to. And again, I like to have the hybrid sort of travel. I might be on a luxury, and probably my next trip might well be on quite an upmarket luxury cruise in West Africa, but also backpacking at destinations in between. And you know what I love about cruising? You unpack once. And that is great. And now, again, for older people, they do have, you know, doctors on board. You consider the medical things. It's not something I would want to do to get on one big cruise ship and, as Tony mentioned, just float around from one destination to the other and go. I don't take advantage of the casinos or the shows. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's not for me. But it's I think people get a bit snobbish about cruises. And if you get the right one, I think they're fabulous.
I think I'm secretly afraid if I ever took one, I might actually like it.
You would.
And then I'd have to backtrack on everything I'd ever said about it. Now, Catherine DeVry is one of my guests. Now, you've got this massive list of things that you have done, and I do need some more information. I think one of your more recent accomplishments was swimming from Asia to Europe, or maybe it was Europe to Asia. I mean, it's not quite as traumatic as it may sound because there is a strait, it's the Dardanelles, isn't it?
It was just one day of the year on Turkey's National Day in August. They closed the shipping channel for a morning, and probably 400 or 500 people, depending on the year, swim across, and it's got all sorts of safety craft. I was probably one of the slowest swimmers ever, even though I'm a lifesaver at Manly Surf Club. I am really slow. I'm almost shark bait in the water, but it's just one stroke after another, and it's great bragging rights to say you swam from Asia to Europe.
So how far is it?
It's not that far. It's only about 4.5 kilometers, and it's with a current usually that carries you along, as long as you don't miss the last turn off for the current and go past the finish line and into the middle of nowhere, which I did.
I was just thinking, you being a lifesaver, you could have helped out Liz, our earlier caller, who wanted to be taken out in the boat.
I was thinking, please stay up where you're going, Liz. Don't come to Manly.
Oh dear. Now, the other thing that I should get you to talk about is going to Everest Base Camp. Now, you're in your 60s. I did that when I was 37, and my goodness, it was so tough. I'd imagine with another 30 years on the...
Well, I guess I've got this thing about ageism. I don't like it. Birthday parties for people are, you know, giving you all these ages cards and saying how old you were. So for my 40th, I climbed Kilimanjaro. For my 50th, I went down to the Antarctic with Greg Mortimer to do an unclimbed peak down there. And for my 60th, I decided to go to Everest Base Camp. But I went with a great travel company, and I'm probably not allowed to mention them on the ABC, but a small travel company. And unlike when I went to Annapurna Base Camp when I was in my 30s and carried my own pack and just picked up a Sherpa in the main street of Kathmandu, this time I went on an organized tour, and all I carried was a day pack. When I got to camp every night, the tent was already set up. There were these fabulous Sherpas. I just love Nepal. That, you know, they had drinks, or, you know, hot drinks for you and meals. So again, I did it. I've done two base camps, but quite differently, but just as enjoyable and being in that scenery.
Yeah. Now, I remember when I did Annapurna, there was a fellow who was 65 who'd been having heart trouble. They said they, you know, had absolutely gone through the ringer trying to get the health in or the travel insurance. And I think when we got to the final ascent, he ended up, they know who's coming, or and there's blokes there with horses. And they gave this guy a horse to ride up to the top.
Oh, fantastic.
So he didn't have to walk all that
way. I wish I'd have been on that trip. Yeah, the biggest problem with our group was we had a young 14-year-old guy from New Zealand who was probably fitter than most of us, but he didn't listen. And he tried to go up too quickly and didn't acclimatize in terms of the altitude. So I think there's some advantages of being older and wiser and listening to what guides tell you rather than being quite as gung-ho as I was when I was younger.
Yeah. So, Tony, do you make adjustments? I mean, Catherine was just saying, look, these days, if someone wants to carry the pack while she treks to Everest Base Camp, that's fine. No shame
yeah,
if you've been
not,
making
it's not
adjustments.
A bad idea.
Yeah.
And I've been to the Everest Base Camp as well, of course, and Kilimanjaro. And, yeah, look, if someone wants to carry my bag now, and there's a lot more opportunity for doing that. I've walked across England, and I've done other long walks in England, but, you know, the Wainwright Way across the one side of England to the other is a 2.5-week walk. And these days you can use a service called Sherpa Van. There's the Nepalese name comes into it. And you get up from wherever you're staying that night, and in the morning you set off with just a day pack, leave your bag behind. And when you get to wherever you're staying at night, there's your bag there. A van has come by and picked it up and delivered it. And all you have to carry is the day pack. Mm. Great.
Thank you, Tony. You've validated me because many of my friends now call me a wimp. But I justify it by saying, hey, I'm helping the local economy.
Don't worry, I've been getting people carrying my packs for years. I think it was my 32nd birthday. I think I did. What's Machu Picchu? Dead Woman's Pass?
Yes.
Yeah, I had someone carry the heavy pack up there. And then felt a bit guilty when I got up first. I thought, well, I didn't really deserve that, did I? Victoria, have you allowed yourself to make some adjustments as you've gotten older just to make things a bit easier for you?
So with my 16-month through the 10 countries, I lugged around a total probably of 40 kilos, so 20 in my trolley bag and 20 in my backpack. And when I do start to travel again, which overseas I mean, I'm going to do it totally differently. I will not have all that stuff. I'm just going to, my intention is to have only enough to take on the plane. And then when I get to the place, to buy op shop stuff.
So what was taking up all those 40 kilos? What did you have that you now think, gosh, I shouldn't have taken that?
Well, I do love clothes. I had a lot of clothes. And 16 months, you do build up winter clothes, you've got summer clothes, and I'm lugging that all around. And I have books and I have a computer because I'm also very much into digital automation. I do that sort of stuff now. So I'm living the dream as much as I'm never going to be retired. I'll always be doing something. And so what I do now is wherever I am, I run my online business from my computer. So yes, computers can be quite heavy. Even my new Mac M1 is still now becoming quite heavy. So I have a problem with that though, Suzanne, because I love clothes and I've got some absolute bargains from op shops. I've still got a dress that I bought in York when I was in the UK and I can't give them back. So I've got to learn that when I do land and I then get the winter clothes for I'm here for winter, then when I leave to go to a summer place, I go back to the op shop and give them back their clothes. And then I get new clothes when I'm in the new country where it's warmer.
I love it. That's a very sensible way to do it. Now, have you all given up your backpacks or do you still actually? No. Catherine's a very emphatic shaking her head there. You're still using a backpack?
Absolutely. But it's just a carry-on backpack. And I've also got the little wheelie thing. And I also do the Russian dolls of suitcases. I'm one of the few people I know, male or female, who usually arrives back with less luggage than when I go, because I often take some of my old clothes that I might give to the Salvation Army or Lifeline here. I take them and I wear them once rather than wash them and then leave them behind, especially with shoes and that as well. And so I then often have Russian dolls of suitcases within suitcases and come back with fewer suitcases than I leave.
There you go. Tony, are you still using a backpack or have you gone to the suitcase?
No, I do care. I do have a wheelie sometimes, but I'm a great believer in only having carry-on.
Yeah.
If you can't just, I mean, my view is however many months you travel, you don't see people for more than a few days. They don't know you've only got three changes of clothes, one on your back, one drying on the shower rail, and one about to be washed. And that's it.
Now, do all of you find as you're getting older that you are meeting an increasing number of older travellers who are also on the road, Catherine?
No, maybe I'm in denial like Tony, but no, I tend to hang out with a lot more younger people.
Right. You don't find that there is an increase in
Oh, I'm sure there are lots of increases in people traveling, but it just kind of seems to be the way I gravitate towards younger people. I've got friends that are older than me and they're fabulous as well. But when I'm traveling on my own, for some reason, that's just the way it happens. It's not intentional.
Isn't that wonderful, though, that so you could be hanging out at the pub and start chatting with the 30-year-olds and it's all good?
Yeah, I really don't have any, because travel is the common denominator. Yeah. And if you're open to whether you're speaking to other travelers or speaking to people in the actual country, you find that generally younger people are more open and more willing. And the other thing, too, and from a very practical sense, when I'm traveling to countries where English might not be the first language, younger people generally speak English more so than older people. So you generally start a conversation with someone younger who may even turn out to be a translator. But I tend to find I have more friendships with younger people on the road in strange places.
Mm. Tony, do you find you're seeing an increasing number of older people out on the road?
There certainly are, because let's face it, we're an aging population, and as the price of airfares go up, that's disqualifying the young backpackers to some extent. But really, you know, it just varies. Every trip, some trip it seems like everybody is young, and some trips everybody is older. It just depends on the individual trip.
And Tony, do you find the same as Catherine, that you can sort of chat with anyone? You don't find that the youngies don't really want to chat with you anymore?
That comment about younger people speaking, I remember I was probably more than 10 years ago, I was traveling from Singapore to Shanghai, and I decided I'd just do it all at surface level, not take any flights. And certainly in China, on the overnight trains, I always seemed to be sharing a four-sleeper compartment with three young Chinese. And remarkably, they always... at least a couple of them would be English speakers, you know, and they would include me in the conversation. So, yeah, it is one of the advantages these days that, I mean, we have the language that everybody speaks, and young people everywhere in the world want to be able to speak it. So, yeah, you end up hanging out with young people.
Yeah. Now, you three between you have sort of dropped so many countries and adventures that are still on my bucket list. So I'm wondering, what's still on your bucket list? And, you know, do you see yourselves really making a dedicated effort, I guess, to continue travelling as long as you possibly can? Victoria, what's on your list?
I think my very next one that I'll go to will be Vietnam.
Yep. And after that, or are you sort of doing one at a time?
Well, because the future is so uncertain with what's happened over the last 3 years, I'm just being very cautious. But there is so much of the world that I haven't seen. Let's just see how it unfolds.
Yeah, I always say too much world and not enough life. Catherine, what's on your bucket list?
Well, I do hope to go to West Africa in April, and that's definitely on my bucket list because I can probably visit a number of countries in a relatively short period of time in between jobs. And I've never been to Rio de Janeiro, and I think it's got to be one of the world's great cities. And so that's on the bucket list. And I don't know, Pakistan. Oh, there's too many. There's too many buckets on the bucket list. I mean, Tony, I don't know. I think he's probably been to over 200 countries. And thank you, Tony and Maureen, for all your Lonely Planet guides who have really helped me visit only 140.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so far behind. Tony, what's still on your bucket list?
Oh, I've got a long bucket list as well. And, you know, I know people who the Travelers Century Club, you go to 100. So Catherine's definitely there. And I do have a number of friends who claim they have been to every country on earth. And of course, you then start arguing about what makes a country and what makes a visit. But one of the ones I'm really hoping to get to this year that I've never been to is Algeria. It's the only country across North Africa that I haven't been to. And I've got lots of interesting reasons why I should go there. Followed by, if we're just talking about countries, the first two places I didn't get to because of the pandemic, I had the flights booked and then it all fell apart, was Paraguay and Uruguay. Huh? So I'm still hoping to get there and go to Montevideo and visit Fray Bentos, where the British corned beef came from.
My goodness, there are still countries Tony Wheeler hasn't been to.
No, probably not. Well, I guess my biggest bragging rights are Timbuktu. And I've written a book called Uluru to Timbuktu, which Tony very kindly gave me a jacket comment from about a year ago. And I'm still looking for a publisher for it. But yeah, there really is such a place as Timbuktu. So, but you can't really put it on your list now for security reasons.
Well, it's not a country either, is it?
No, Timbuktu is a city in a country called Mali.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you three are all my heroes, and thank you so much for joining us tonight on Nightlife to talk to us. I guess this is this indefatigable kind of travel spirit that you all have, and that no matter, I guess, you know, the pandemic or getting a bit older, you're all still out there determined to see as much as you can. Thank you so much for joining me on Nightlife.
Thank you so much, because the world is just full of very kind people if you keep your mind and your heart open.
Hear, hear. Tony, thank you so much for being part of the chat.
Thank you. A great talk.
And Victoria, lovely to speak to you too. Happy travels.
Thank you. And you have to live before you die.
Very, very true. That was Catherine DeVry, Victoria Rose and Tony Wheeler. Hope maybe there was a bit of inspiration in that conversation for you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.